This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to the official Raider podcast. I'm your host, JT. Thanks for joining us this week, and I am thrilled with what we put together for this week's edition of the podcast. When I saw this game on the schedule, I knew I was coming up for the Battle of the Bay, going to be right there, excited about this game. This is a game you had circled all year long, especially if you live in the Bay Area. But I noticed the gentleman calling the game, and I know all three of them, and I have the utmost respect for all of these broadcasters. We're going to talk to Chris Myers from the NFL on Fox. He's Fox's face of NASCAR. He's had such a great career from ESPN all the way to Fox, and now he's calling this game in the booth, and he's a former teammate of mine on Fox Sports Radio. Ted Robinson, talk about an accomplished broadcaster from the Olympics, from tennis around the world, college football, college basketball, and he's the radio voice of the 49ers. And we're going to kick it off with a man who I think is the best in the business, the best play-by-play voice in all of football, and I sincerely mean that, Greg Papa, the voice of the Silver and Black. We'll kick it off with him. And Greg, thanks for joining us on the podcast this week. And you live in the Bay Area. You're the voice of the Raiders. I know how excited you must be for the Battle of the Bay.
Without question, the fan base loves this. The Niners have not come to Oakland, JT, since 2002. That was the year the Raiders went to the Super Bowl, and it was a Jeff Garcia game. And that was the year the Raiders started 4-0, wound up losing 4 in a row, and that was the fourth consecutive loss. They would rally and win 7 of the last 8 to go to the Super Bowl. But great rival. We haven't played them since 2010. We used to play them every single year in the preseason, and we should, but got a little wild last time we were there a few years ago. So, yeah, if there's one game that the Raider Nation wants to win, the Chief game was nice, but they've been waiting for December the 7th. This date will live in infamy, JT.
Greg, what happened after you walked out of the Coliseum after the Kansas City win and you walked into the Dome in St. Louis? Never in my wildest dreams did I think that the Raiders would take the momentum from the Kansas City game and get boat raced 52-0.
I don't think any of us did. I certainly respected St. Louis and thought they were a good team, but and I like the way you phrase it, because walking out of that game against the Chiefs, it was a pouring rainstorm. The fans were in it all night, and this is a franchise that has won Super Bowls, been to Super Bowls, among the winningest franchises in the history of American sport, and the way the fan base just celebrated a victory was amazing to me. They did not want to go through this whole thing winless, and to do it against the Chiefs was amazing. And then to go to St. Louis 10 days later, and it was a very sterile environment with all the events going on in Ferguson. The place was half empty. It wasn't a real electric crowd. So I thought that would play to the Raiders' benefit, because it wouldn't be a real hostile road environment to play in. But they just played flat. They didn't show up. What really disturbed me is just how slow-footed they were. And it's hard to watch the Raiders and knowing Al Davis's love for speed, foot speed, just watch them get beat in space the way they did. Just the quick throws and the way they just could not line up with the speed and catch those guys in space. They had a hard time laying a finger on them, let alone tackling them. So it was quite a come down from the elation of the Chief game. But I think they're going to ratchet it back up, and we're going to see more of the Chief effort against the 49ers on Sunday.
Greg, assess the play of Derek Carr, because when we left London, he was banged up in that game, and I just love the way, coming off the bye week, he wanted to get back on the field, and he's had some big games, and that game-winning drive against Kansas City was absolutely fantastic. He got pulled in the last game. I don't want to call him gun-shy, because he's a gunslinger. Does he have enough time in the pocket, or is the problem the Raiders can't establish a running game, and he's coming very past predictable?
Well, he's an amazing young man, and I know how close you are with Al Saunders, and Al told me early on in training camp that he is the most mature rookie he's ever been around in pro football, and Al's been around forever. He was with Al as a ball boy back in 63, so he dates that far back, and he's just light years ahead of anybody his age. He's so mature. He's a great leader of men. He's poised to do that. The adjustment he's going to have to make, and he's making it, and he's made great strides, but he has a lot longer way to go. And it's not unlike a lot of quarterbacks around the league, these young quarterbacks that are making the transition from college football. The offense that he played in Fresno State was a catch and throw. He was in the shotgun. He got it, and he found a quick receiver out of an empty set and got rid of it in 2 seconds. And in pro football, it's just he's doing some of that, but he's under center a lot. He's got to go through his progressions and his reads. And I think the one area of growth for him is going to be pocket awareness, and it's hard. It's hard to learn it. I think early on, JT, he was throwing the ball too fast. You know, they look at the Raider low sack total, which is good, but I think he gets rid of the ball too fast, where guys are not fully developed in their routes. He's not letting the play develop, and he's getting rid of it too fast. In the Ram game, I thought he decided to hold it a little bit, and the rush got to him. And he didn't look to step out of the rush. He just kind of cowered down a little bit and just protected the football. And I think he gave up on a couple of plays that might have been there. So he'll grow. I mean, it's hard to learn that, but I think that's the number one area that he's going to have to grow. Not unlike a lot of quarterbacks. He's just going to have to get that pocket presence, that pocket awareness that the savvy veterans have, like Tom Brady, just slightly moves his body to the right and left and hardly really changes his body position, but just enough where they can't get him. And at all times, he keeps his eyes downfield to where he's going to throw the football.
Greg Papa is the voice of the Raiders. He joins us. Greg, Latavius Murray, after he had his big game against Kansas City, we both have talk shows, and fans flooded our shows talking about him. And, you know, with the concussion protocol and the remainder of this year is one thing, but it's great in the NFL when you can find a running back who can turn into a feature running back and be a star. Do you think he has that type of ability because of his size and strength where the Raiders won't have to think out of the box over the next year or two? Maybe they found their diamond in the rough, and he can be a workhorse.
Well, we'll see. There's a long way to go. The first time I ever saw him on the practice field after the Raiders drafted him, he reminded me of Bo Jackson. His body, his speed, he just looked like a guy that was big and strong and powerful but had breakaway speed. Then he got hurt, and he had a toe injury, and he just looked like he was limping around. I never quite saw that speed again. And then in training camp, he didn't really jump out at you, and he really has not. On the practice field, he looks okay. He has not looked great, but it's hard. You know, practice is different. Nobody's tackling live in practice. The few runs that he's had in pro football this year, the back-to-backs in San Diego, I thought those were the two best runs that were blocked that day, and the runs were pretty easy reads. But he did hit it, and he put together good back-to-back chunk yards. Now, the runs he had against Kansas City, he had two really impressive ones. The first one, the 11-yarder, was more impressive to me, because that wasn't designed to go that way. It was just a simple off left tackle run, and he saw it and he bopped it, and he had the quickness, not just straight line speed, but foot speed quickness to get around the edge. And once he turned the corner, he was gone. It was just a little tiny 11-yard run, but the fact that he skirted that edge like the elite guys do. The second one, the 90-yarder, was just a simple cutback run, and no one laid a finger on him. Now, what impressed you there was the speed. When he hit the Raider 20-yard line, 80 yards from the Chief goal line, I thought he was gone. And Eric Berry is a very fast player. He was moving away from Eric Berry for the last 30 or 40 yards. So it's all encouraging, but he only had 9 snaps in that Chief game, KT. So you just kind of have to wait. He also fumbled the ball after he took the big hit. I remember him dropping a ball in San Diego on a big 3rd-and-4. He's got a long way to go. He's certainly a prospect, and I think we've seen enough of Maurice Jones-Drew at this point in his career, in this point of the season, where I would take the carries away from MJD. In fact, I think about even not having him active for this game. He is good in pass protection, but I think other backs can do that. I would like to see Murray get his carries, but I wouldn't bench Darren McFadden. I think I'd do a co-op, but I would like to see him get the ball 12 or 15 times a game.
Greg, the Niners moved to Santa Clara, but the firestorm in San Francisco about this Jim Harbaugh story is amazing. Forget about where he's going to end up. It looks like the Wolves are at the door. You're part of the Bay Area media with your talk show and your peers in the business. Everybody wants a piece of this Harbaugh story. How do you think he's handling it? What is it like day to day in the Bay Area with this Harbaugh coverage?
He is just a lightning rod. It's amazing the fascination the Bay Area has with Jim Harbaugh. I mean, I guess because we kind of knew him here. He wasn't, he coached on the Raiders staff as a quarterback coach. I knew him well in 02 and 03. He went away for a while. Al Davis was very close to him. And then when he came back to Stanford and they had Andrew Luck, you know, I watched every snap of that of his reign there because that offense just fascinated me and what Andrew Luck could do. Jim's a quality head football coach. He He has the combination, JT, of a great athlete, and you know, you've been around enough great athletes. There's nothing like the swagger of a great athlete. It's just the way they are. They've been that way since we were kids all the way through adults, and it's just a little bit of a, depending on how they use it, it can be a little caustic. And then when you put that swagger of a great athlete into the role of being a head coach or a leader of men, they do it a little differently. It's a little different than, say, Bill Belichick does it, or Andy Reid does it, or you know, name somebody else in other sports, Greg Popovich, you know, how he would do it. It's a little bit of that bravado of a great athlete. And I think Jim is a hard worker. You know, when he was quarterbacking in the NFL, he would go back in the offseason to work at Western Kentucky with his dad, Jack, and learn to be a coach. He wanted to be a coach when he was done. I think he's a quality coach. I think he has a great coaching staff. But I think his personality is just, it's tough for the media to understand it sometimes. And I think he's having a hard time in his own building is the real problem. So I don't know where he's going to land. I'm sure he'll have offers to coach in the NFL. I'm sure he'll go back to Michigan tomorrow. I think he's a quality coach, and the goal on Sunday is to find a way to beat him and get him to 7-6.
Hey, Greg, as we wrap this up, what do you think Reggie McKenzie and Mark Davis are thinking these last four games? I'll ask you what you were thinking here, the evaluation process, everyone fighting for a job. Obviously, certain players will not be back next year, and the Raiders are going to have to build on young players like Carr and Mack. The last quarter of the season begins with San Francisco at Kansas City, Buffalo at home before the last game at Denver. What do you expect to see?
Well, I think what they're looking at is different things. Mark has got to evaluate this coaching staff. So when you see the team play the way they played Sunday in St. Louis, JT, and you were in London with us, and it was worse. You know, it was, you know, when a Schottenheimer pulls the reins, you know, and doesn't run up the score. I remember his dad, Marty, running up the scores on us on a Halloween when he was coaching the Chargers, and for Brian Schottenheimer to pull in the reins and kind of feel sorry for us, that's unacceptable. I mean, Mark's going to look at that and just the way they played that day is unacceptable. And then for Reggie and the coaching staff, some of the players in this game, JT, did not, I didn't see the fight that I've seen earlier. They had really not been blown out in the game since London against the Dolphins. I saw them turning down tackles sometimes in the open field. I saw a lack of fight. They never got back into the game. I mean, St. Louis owned the game. The Raiders never got any momentum going at all. We hardly even got inside the red zone. So for the owner, I think he's looking at the coaching staff because he has to make a big call at the end of the year and say, you know, are these guys getting through to these men? And then Reggie, who I think will be back, I think he's looking at it as though which guys are quitting on me, which guys want to fight the good fight all the way to the end, which veterans are talking a good game and not playing a good game, and which one of these young guys really have what it takes to be a part of it when we come back and win again.
Greg, last question. I've seen you on specials and documentaries talk about the great Bay Area broadcasters and sports who came before you, Lon Simmons, and what Bill King meant to you. What does it mean to you to be the voice of the Raiders?
Well, it's Bill. I mean, that's Bill was just such a yardstick for me in every sport, whether it's football or basketball or baseball. I think he's the finest radio broadcaster the country's ever known, to be able to do the three sports the level he did. And just, you know, reading about him, I remember Sports Illustrated article about him back in the 70s when I was a kid, when he was doing the Raiders and the, you know, the handlebar mustache, and reading you know, Russian poetry, and just his eclectic lifestyle living in Sausalito and on the boat. And he was so well educated, and I got close to him when I was doing the A's games. I was doing A's TV and he was doing A's radio, and we'd sat across the aisle from each other on the charter, and we just, I just listened. I let him talk, and he'd tell me great stories about the NBA in the 60s and 70s. He just loved it. He loved it, and he had such a passion for it. His word choice, his description, everything about it. He made it come alive. His energy, his preparation. You know, we talked about how different it is for me to prepare for a game now with all the video access that I have versus when he was doing it. It was just, you know, so much more challenging back then. So, and the touchdown Raider call has evolved over the years. I don't think I did it the first year, but I did it as a tribute to Bill. It was obviously the inflection was different the way I do it, but the Bill's call was touchdown Raiders. And I just felt like, I just remember before I took the job, I said to him, the fans want you to do it. They really want you back. And it's going to be hard for me to have any success if they, you know, if you, with you hovering there. But he made it clear that he didn't want it. He didn't want to do football anymore. He didn't want to do basketball anymore. He strictly wanted to do baseball. It was his love. He was a baseball catcher when he grew up, and he wanted to, you know, do baseball. So I was just carrying on the tradition of what he started, and that's where the touchdown Raiders call came from. JT, was my tribute to Bill.
Greg, really appreciate you doing this. Great catching up with you. I'll see you Sunday on the sidelines. All the best, buddy.
It's that big of a game. You're going to make a showing Sunday at the game. I can't wait to.
You
see.
Should see my travel schedule. I'm coming up. I'll be there.
You're
take
bad,
care.
Man. I'll see you Sunday. Don't wear red. Don't wear red.
You got it, Greg. See you then. Thank you.
Take care, JT.
Thanks again to Greg Papa. We're all fortunate he's calling the games for the Silver and Black. And now joining us, one of the best broadcasters out there, the voice of the 49ers, Ted Robinson, joins us. And, Ted, we really appreciate you coming on the podcast. And you're living in the Bay Area. You got to be thrilled about this. This is a rivalry. These teams don't play often. But there's a lot on the line, especially for the 49ers on Sunday.
Yeah, well, JT, first, it's nice to talk to you again. I look forward to seeing you Sunday. And, you know, the obvious change in this game was, for months everybody looked at this game and said trap game for the 49ers. Well, there's no trap about it. It's, you know, no different than any other game. It's an absolute, you know, in essence, the 49ers single elimination season starts on Sunday.
And Ted, not only with that, I don't want to get too much into it here, we only have a certain amount of time, but with the Wolves being at the door, the Bay Area media and the national media just wanting answers about the future of Jim Harbaugh coming into this game, his connections with Al Davis. He started off as a coach on the other side of the Bay with the Raiders, and it doesn't sound like this is going to calm down over the next couple of weeks.
No, JT, I don't think so. It went away in October, largely because the Giants went on to win the World Series. And then through most of November, the 49ers were winning games. And the Thanksgiving night thing just unleashed it. And now I do think it will hover over these last 4 weeks. And obviously the reaction to the Thanksgiving game on Twitter is the one that will probably not allow it to go away.
Ted Robinson joins us. And Ted, Colin Kaepernick is the prototype running quarterback. But we haven't seen him running, using his legs much this season. Why is Kaepernick not running more?
I wish I had an answer for that. And my belief, and it took me maybe part of Thanksgiving weekend to really have this hit me after the Seattle game, was that it really struck me that Colin looked almost robotic. He looked very mechanical in his movements. He's not playing with a lot of confidence. That's clear. He's not been confident in his offensive line, with reason, but he's moving mechanically. And Russell Wilson moves so fluidly. So that's, I think, the big immediate challenge for the 49ers in the short term, the last 4 weeks. Can you get Kaepernick back to where he plays with some looseness about him and big plays? Without the big plays, Colin Kaepernick does not stand out as a quarterback.
And, Ted, everybody's wondering. We saw what happened to RG3 when he was running a bunch and got severely injured, and he hasn't been the same player. I'm almost sensing that the Niners are holding him back when it comes to play calls. When he's able to sprint outside the pocket, or it's a design play off the read option, the way he was able to do it against Green Bay a couple of years ago, no one could catch him, let alone tackle him. Do you expect to see that over the next coming weeks?
Well, I think in places, JT, and I've learned one thing around the NFL, and I've had it told to me by coaches many times, is in the pros, people can stop you from doing something. They can take anything away from you they want. The problem is you can't take everything away. So as an offense, all right, if they stop me from this, then they're going to let me do that. For example, after that Green Bay playoff game that you referenced, where Kaepernick just tortured the Packers, the next week in the NFC Championship game, Mike Nolan completely sold out, the Falcons coordinator, to stop Kaepernick's run. And he admitted it after the game. He totally sold out to do it. He left Vernon Davis home, and Vernon Davis killed the Falcons in that game. So what the 49ers have seen, a lot of teams do that. There are spies on Kaepernick. Seattle didn't spy Kaepernick, by the way, during the championship game last year, and he ran for 130. KJ Wright was the spy most of last week on him. So, you know, I think what we saw in the Green Bay thing is likely never going to happen again. But the ability, as I said, to extend and make big plays. And it only Wilson did it three times the other night. Seattle's offense was not very good except for those three or four big plays that Wilson made. That's what hasn't been with Kaepernick.
Ted Robinson joins us. Ted, I'm shocked, and I was with the Raiders in London. Dennis Allen got let go. Tony Sperano takes over. I never thought that the Raiders, and I didn't think they'd be a playoff team or go deep in the playoffs, but I thought they'd have more than one win. How are you seeing this from a distance, but you're pretty close there in the Bay Area? Are you shocked by this, and what are some of the concerns that the Raiders have moving forward as they wrap up this season?
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, because I'm looking at it from 40,000 feet up, JT, so please frame all these comments as such. You know, I saw Derek Carr play in college, and it's an outstanding college offense, but you just throw the ball sideways. And he's very good at that, and it worked at Fresno State in the Mountain West. I don't know if that works in the NFL, and I'm seeing a lot of that. I'm seeing a lot of sideways and short throws and not classic Raiders strike. Now, like the 49ers, they may not have the weapons to strike deep. And the other thing I noticed watching last Sunday a little bit, actually live on Sunday, the first touchdown of the game, and they threw a screen pass to Trey Mason. He ran down the right sideline, and I had to go look who the player was, 55 and with the Raiders. And I found out it's C.O. Moore, and I thought he's been held in high regard, and he kind of halved it on that play. He kind of ran over to the sideline, and then he kind of eased up and let Mason run by him, and then Mason ran through somebody else and scored. And that's the sort of stuff that you look at when your team is not going well. And trust me, I will watch the 49ers in the first half Sunday on this same count to make sure that everybody's engaged, everybody's there, and playing the way they should play. And that play by Moore and the Raider defense to start the game in St. Louis Sunday, if I'm a Raider coach, that was a huge red flag.
Ted, finally, I asked this to Greg Popo, what it meant to him to be the voice of the Raiders, and he paid tribute to Bill King. I'll ask you, with the 49ers, what a great, proud organization with all those big games and championships. What does it mean to you to be the voice of the Niners?
Well, that's it. Obviously, we have both franchises here. You know, the 49ers went through their down period. They're back. The Raiders are going through one right now, but they both have great legacy, and that's what you recognize, that you have a job that few have ever had. The 49ers have only had a handful of announcers. They're all in the legend category, like Bill King. But what's been phenomenal, JT, and you always come back to a game. And I come back to the playoff game against New Orleans in 2011, which ended with the Alex Smith to Vernon Davis touchdown pass. The last 4 minutes of that game was the best final four minutes I can ever remember to a playoff game. And the point I'm making is that that was 10 years of frustration being let out by 49er fans. And there was a whole generation, like my kids, who didn't know the 49er dynasty. And this was the first time they had ever seen a 49er playoff game. And that's when you felt the importance of the moment. And I know when the Raiders get back, whatever year that is, they will feel, their fans will feel the same way, because they're enduring one right now like the 49ers had for about a decade.
Ted, I'll see you Sunday on the field. Thanks so much for your time. Great catching up with you.
Thanks, okay, Ted. Guys, thank you.
Thanks again to Ted Robinson, who joined us. Looking forward to seeing him on Sunday. Finally, Fox has got this game, the NFL on Fox, and Chris Myers is calling the game. I go back a long way with Chris. I have so much respect for him, my former teammate here on Fox Sports Radio, and now he joins us on the official Raider podcast. And Chris, I know you prep a lot for all the games and all the opportunities you get as a broadcaster, but how about all the noise and chatter about Jim Harbaugh? Not so much on the Oakland side, but he got a start in the NFL with Al Davis. But can you believe that a coach who's been this successful is getting this much heat around the Bay Area? People are calling for his job like he has to run the table. Are you surprised by this?
I'm a little surprised about, you know, he's produced. Let's remind 49er fans how bad it was before Harbaugh showed up there. And this is a team with a great track record of success before Harbaugh, though they were down in the dumps, and he made the tough decision from Smith to Kaepernick, three straight championship games, even a Super Bowl appearance. But, you know, I still think they're in position to run the table and make the playoffs, but over the last four games, I think back, JT, to guys like Bill Parcells and even Belichick to a certain degree, you know, very good coaches who were in situations, whether it was control or just their personalities, rubbed people who were the real bosses, owners, decision makers the wrong way, and that forced some kind of move one way or another, and sometimes just change is good over a period of time. So I'm surprised that it's at least on the outside gotten this bad, and from what the reports say from the inside, and not so much from players, but just from what you said, maybe some of those that run the organization with Harbaugh, considering how successful he's been and what he's done. And maybe part of it is that he thinks it's time for him to go somewhere else to coach. At least that's what we're trying to find out. I'm actually looking forward to sitting down. It's always a test talking to him at a production meeting, but at least we get that opportunity on the TV side to get some candid thoughts, if he's up for it. I watched his news conference earlier this week, and it was difficult for him to try to prepare, not for him, but at least to answer questions about his coaching career. As he said, he has a recessive gene that doesn't allow him to worry about his job beyond what's ahead, and his focus is the Raiders.
Chris Myers is our guest calling the Battle of the Bay for Fox. Chris, we're talking about the Battle of the Bay, but you were a part of the coverage of the Bay Bridge series, Giants-A's The Earthquake of 1989. Take us back to that.
Yeah, that was my first year working at ESPN as a young West Coast reporter and covering the World Series with Chris Berman and Bob Lee and sitting up in the stands at the old Candlestick Park when the earthquake hit with the A's and the Giants, and not realizing how serious the damage was in and around that area. Of course, watching players scatter, concerned for their families that were in attendance, and then what ensued afterwards, trying to decide whether they should continue to even play the World Series, how much time off. There were obviously safety concerns and things like that. But I tell you, always in these situations, and Tony La Russa, the manager of the A's back at the time, Roger Craig with the Giants, it impresses me how people rally around the situation, and whether it was citizens in the community or those in baseball faith. Vincent had by candlelight telling us, hey, we'll find a way to help this area get back, and also to get the World Series to be fair to both teams and to play it out. And that's one of the things that stands out for me in that moment. But at that moment, it was tough. I mean, we didn't know aftershocks what was coming next. I think people under the circumstances acted as unruly as they could in a situation where some people could have panicked and made it worse.
Hey, Chris, finally, I grew up in New York, and I remember as a kid when the late game would come on NBC, if it was Kurt Gowdy or Charlie Jones, and you'd see the sun-drenched field in Oakland, Kenny the Snake Stabler. For you, with your background in Florida, then your time in New Orleans, and you've been around the country, now you're settled in Southern California, it's got to be a big deal for you. You've had an unbelievable career, but calling a game at the Oakland Coliseum, baseball, football, there's been a lot of great moments on that field.
Absolutely, and the history, as growing up in South Florida, when the Dolphins, they had a lot of great battles with the Raiders. I mean, I even remember, and you said some great broadcast names with Al DeRogatis and Charlie Jones and Kirk Gowdy calling the games on NBC, and I was a big, John Madden coaching, and the Mad Bomber, Daryl and Monica, loved that style of play. Just as a young football fan growing up, I was attracted to that before I knew I would even get into broadcasting, before I even went to school. And the Raiders have always had, I know the success hasn't been there lately, but they're one of those teams. You think about the Dolphins, the Packers, the Steelers, the Cowboys, that cross all boundaries. And 90% of the people that watch the NFL, make it such a popular sport on television, don't go to a stadium to see a game because there's not one in their area. And so the Raiders are among that popular group, but it's a great stadium. I just saw the note. We're going to talk with Colin Kaepernick, who I know is upset about the way he's playing, almost speechless with the 49ers, but had been to the Coliseum as a youngster in the punt, pass, and kick contest. So he brings a little bit of a unique perspective into this game as a 49er. So I did the game last year, and I know it didn't turn out well for the Raiders, but Nick Foles threw the record-tying 7 touchdown passes for the Eagles in a game against the Raiders. And at the time, the Raiders were playing good defense and off to a pretty good start. So you never know what you're going to get, and John Madden will probably be in the building. So that's always a good scene when you go to the Coliseum.
I will see you Sunday. Thanks so much for doing this, Chris. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's always good talking to you guys. And yeah, come by and say hi in the booth.
Great to catch up with Chris Myers again. So I hope you enjoyed this week's edition of the podcast, The Broadcasters, Greg Papa, Ted Robinson, and Chris Myers. I'll see you Sunday in Oakland if you're going to the game. If not, keep forwarding the podcast. Send it out via Facebook, Twitter. Keep going to Raiders.com. And for everyone at Silver and Black Productions, I'm JT. Thanks for joining us on the official Raider podcast.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.